You're listening to The Big Cast, your source for the latest in financial technology. Brought to you weekly by the Best Innovation Group, with your hosts, John Best and Glenn Servati.
Welcome to another edition of The Big Cast. My name is Glenn Servati on behalf of the Best Innovation Group, where we like to do cool things with financial technology. And this week we've got an interview with an old friend of the podcast, Rachel Pross, who is the Chief Operations Officer of MAPS Credit Union out in Salem, Oregon. And she recently wrote a piece that I stumbled on and gave me a good excuse to catch up with her about something that she calls strategic stopping, which I think is a very undervalued skill. Everybody just loves to charge forward, and once they decide on a mission, my God, they're going to get to the end of that trail no matter what. There's the metaphor, getting to the end of the trail. Rachel and her husband recently took a trip that wound up not going quite as planned through a mountain range in a national or state park out in the Northwest. So she'll be telling us a little bit about that and what she learned and how she relates that to some of her business experience. So we'll be talking to Rachel just in a few minutes. Remind you again that you can always find out more about the Best Innovation Group by checking out our website, big-fintech.com. One of the things I'll point out at present that I think would be worth looking into is our Innovation Club. There's a tab for the Innovation Club you'll find there on the website. We've got our annual, I believe, well, semi-annual, I think it happens a couple times a year, in-person meeting coming up in March. The group normally meets virtually on a regular basis. Great opportunity to really share best practices and really work with some of the real thought leaders in the credit union space toward finding the latest solutions to solve key problems facing the industry. If that sounds like something that might be of interest to you, whether on an ongoing basis or to see what's going on in person, which will be in Arizona, if I'm not mistaken, in a couple of weeks, do check it out at the website, the Best Innovation Group Innovation Club. You'll find a link to that in our show notes as well, which we always provide if you're listening via Apple Music, Spotify, wherever else you get your podcasts. You should be able to click through and find the links to things that we refer to here on the podcast. Or if you're listening directly on the website, big-fintech.com, at the media tab, you can find the archive of all of our past episodes and dig in there as well. The biggest news that I've seen this week, I'm kind of surprised it hasn't gotten more attention than it has, is FIS has announced that it's going to be spinning off its Worldpay credit card business, which it acquired in 2019. And in 2019, there were three significant acquisitions that I really thought redefined the payment space. You had the first one that kind of started the deck of the domino effect was Fiserv acquiring First Data in January. Then in July, FIS followed up with this acquisition of Worldpay. And then a little bit later in the fall, Global Payments combined with TSYS. That one was considered a merger of equals was the way it was billed. But if you take a look, they've continued under the Global Payments name, which tells you something. So, I mean, we're, what, about 4 years down the trail? And I find it interesting that we have now decided that at least one of them is pretty much unwinding. So the Worldpay, and we don't know all the details yet. I think that's still to come in terms of seeing exactly where they will, if there may be some pieces they retain or some legacy pieces of the FIS business that winds up being spun off into a separate publicly traded unit as well. But the Worldpay name will come back. The former CEO of Worldpay has been brought back, who will actually take on that business. I guess this is the kind of thing it's, if you take a look at the history, it was a $35 billion acquisition, which was the biggest of those three. The other two both came in at around 21 or 22 billion. And if you look, at least in terms of market reaction, FIS has fared the worst since those deals. FIS stock has been down 30% in just the past year and almost by half since that deal was originally struck back in July of 2019. It's also interesting to note that in the interim, they've got a new CEO, Stephanie Ferris, who took the helm last year, and some activist investors who have gotten involved in things like spinoffs are exactly the types of things that activist investors are often trying to get accomplished to try to, quote unquote, unlock value. So that seems to be the path we're taking. And I guess with a new management team, I guess it gives an opportunity for a new broom to sweep clean. Another piece of information here that I find very telling is in the process of making this announcement, FIS announced a $17.5 billion impairment charge against the acquisition, which, if you look at the number, is exactly half of what they actually paid for Worldpay. Pretty big number. Now, we'll see if that actually turns out to be the case. At this stage of the game, it's usually, you know, wiser to overestimate the impairment and then maybe claw some of that back. The last thing you want to do is have to go back and give more bad news later. By comparison, if you take a look at Fiserv, since their acquisition of First Data, their stock has been up 20% in the past year and about 50% since the deal was announced. So I think you have to probably declare, at least in terms of market reaction, and obviously there's a lot of other stuff going on besides for just these anchor deals, but they were pretty significant in reshaping all three of these companies. They're up 50% since that deal was struck. Global Payments, since their combination with TSYS, is down 17% this year, in the past 12-month period, and one-third since they struck their deal. Now, they've got some additional ins and outs going on, so I think that's worth pointing out. They made another fairly significant acquisition last year, Evo Payments, about $4 billion of an acquisition. And they've also announced that two of the pieces that they currently, one of the pieces they bought as part of TSYS was the consumer-facing Netspend business. They've announced they're selling it. It has not closed yet, but that's being sold for about $1 billion. And just this week, the latest thing, this was not part of the acquisition. I believe it was originally part of Global Payments, but their gaming business around casinos and things along those lines was spun off and sold to a private equity firm. A little bit smaller. It gets a fair bit of attention. I was a little bit surprised to see it was only a $415 million acquisition from what I read. Our friends at Payments Dive have done, from what I've seen, the best detail on a lot of these transactions. So I will post a link to some of their coverage and thank them for sharing some of that information. But I think there's going to be more to come, particularly on the FIS WorldPay side when they start putting out some disclosure documents. And I'm definitely going to be following along with that one. So we'll keep you up to date. With no further ado, let's get into our conversation. Rachel Pross has been with us before for a variety of different topics, and we'll get into some of that in this interview as well. But this time around, let's hear what she has to say about strategic stopping. I'm here with Rachel Pross, the Chief Operating Officer of MAPS Credit Union in the Oregon State Capitol, Salem, Oregon. Rachel, we've spoken before, and I think last time you were the Chief Risk Officer, and now you've taken on the COO title. Good to talk to you again, and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So I always follow you regularly on social media. I love your perspective on things, but you recently posted an article that really, really caught my eye, basically talking about a backpacking trip that you and your husband took, and kind of applying it as a metaphor for, you know, the approach that people take to strategy in credit unions or basically any kind of business, for lack of a better phrase, is the kind of the power of strategically stopping, I think, is kind of how we could boil that down. Can you say a bit about, you know, maybe just give a background, and we'll post a link to the story so people, because it's worth it and it's got some great photos in it too. But, you know, kind of the original journey that you took and kind of how it wound up going not according to plan.
Yes, I'm happy to. So we had this big trip planned around Mount Rainier. We were going to do a figure eight loop kind of on the northern side of it. And it is a lengthy process and a tedious one to even get the permit to be able to do a backpacking trip on Mount Rainier. So we were thrilled. We had been selected in the lottery and we had secured this epic adventure together and had everything planned out and we're ready to go.
And this is how many days or how many miles? I mean, it's got a big elevation climb too, right?
Right. We were going to climb about, I think it was 20,000 vertical feet.
Wow.
And it was going to be over about 60 miles. And we had planned to be out there for a week. So we really wanted the time to be able to enjoy the scenery and stop and take photos and not be trying to crank out, you know, 15 miles a day, 20 miles a day that some people do backpacking. Also, the terrain was going to be just far too difficult to move at that speed. So we had it all planned out and thought we had every box checked, and we did as far as preparation goes. But a few days into it, we were kind of approaching the end of the day, and it was our most difficult day of the trip, where we had some serious vertical climbing and quite a long distance and a major river crossing. And towards the end of the day, this massive plume of smoke blew in, and it was dense. I mean, you could not see just more than a few feet in front of you on the trail. We lost our view of the mountain peak, and we had to make a decision the next morning of whether or not to bail on our trip, because we happened to be at a camp that next morning that was the only camp on our entire trip that was accessible by forest road. So it was our only opportunity to leave the trail, and we had to evaluate a number of factors, and ultimately we decided to stop. It wasn't worth our health, and we risked the opportunity to do future trips if we caused ourselves lung or heart damage. So we opted to exit, but boy, it was tough, and it taught me some valuable lessons that over, you know, the last several months, I was reflecting on it as we get ready to apply for the lottery again this year. And I started.
You're gonna give it another shot. You're gonna try to retrace this.
Oh yeah. I have to. So I have to finish it.
I mean, you mentioned in the article, I mean, you guys, I mean, your eyes were burning, your lungs. I mean, you were coughing heavily. I mean, it was serious.
It was pretty serious. We were coughing. Yeah. Runny eyes, really sore throats, runny noses, severe headaches. And we were watching, there were other backpackers around us that were all bailing and hitching rides out. And so as we watched those folks, I started thinking, okay, you know, they're onto something here. Maybe we should consider this.
Well, you mentioned there was kind of like a decision tree. You can think about, you know, what could happen. The skies could suddenly clear and everything could just be fine.
Exactly.
Or you could need an emergency airlift rescue.
Right.
Or, like you say, you could be miserable the rest of the way. You could do, you know, kind of some kind of permanent damage to your, you know, to your respiratory system. I mean, you could
have
a lot of different scenarios, most of them probably negative, I'm guessing.
Exactly. And ultimately, the potential for reward was not as significant as the outcomes if things had gone wrong. So our risk just far outweighed the benefit. And even if things had, you know, there was that carrot out there that things might clear up and we may have the most epic adventure over the following 4 days. And that the night before the smoke blew in, we had, you know, everything was perfect. The next morning we had seen a bear face to face on the trail. And I mean, just had these epic experiences with wildlife and views. And I kept thinking, that's the carrot out there. That's our reward. But the cost, if things go wrong, it could cost us very dearly in our health and in our future ability to have adventures. So ultimately, we decided the cost did not outweigh the benefit.
Spoken like a chief risk officer by training.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, we talked about this too. I mean, you hate the idea of quitting. And your husband had to kind of get you past that issue that, you know, you were going to be stepping away from something you planned so thoroughly.
Oh, yes. He knows me well. And that was one of the first things he said before I even had to say the words out loud. He knew that's what I was thinking, because I just don't quit. And just come hell or high water, I'm going to see my goals through to the bitter end, even if those goals, you know, sometimes things change in mid-flight. And he knew that was going to be the first thing I thought. And he just kind of, I was very tearful. And he said, look, we didn't quit here. We made a strategic decision to stop. You know, we weighed the risks and benefits, and it's just not worth the cost. So he kind of centered me in that moment and made me realize that I wasn't quitting. I was making a really smart decision.
And you really kind of extended that metaphor into the business world. I mean, that's, like you say, we get sometimes so hell-bent on, you know, one specific initiative that unforeseen circumstances that may or may not be within our control suddenly create new hurdles. And, you know, the goal, you know, the temptation is to just to plow straight forward, but that may not always be the right decision.
Right.
I mean, how can you kind of, I mean, one of the things you mentioned also in the article, I think that was interesting, is kind of the throwing good money after bad idea. You had a reward kind of dangling out another carrot, a nice Airbnb for the final night that you already kind of put down a deposit for.
Yeah, we were past the refund period, and I had booked us an Airbnb for the day we completed the journey, because I knew that we would need to first and foremost get a shower, a long shower, and then a good night's sleep. And I just kept thinking, and I had kind of sprung for a unique Airbnb that was more expensive than I'd usually get. And I kept thinking, well, that's non-refundable. I mean, we're going to be out hundreds of dollars if we bail now, because I can't move it around. And I just kept thinking, and I already took the PTO, like the PTO is done. I took it, it's out there. And I kept thinking about, you know, money that I had already given up. But really, if you think about it, when we made the decision, or when the, actually before we even made the decision, when the smoke blew in, really the decision was made for us in a lot of ways. And that money was already gone. Nothing I would have done right then would have changed the fact that that money had already gone out the door. And if we had made it to that Airbnb, we probably would have been really sick and not enjoyed it. And so I was so focused on losing money that I failed to recognize that really it was already out the door, and why throw more time at it? And why, you know, like I said in the article, why throw good money after bad? Because I could have either used that PTO to be miserable just to complete my goal, or I could have saved it and used it when the weather was better and not wasted that money. I could have thrown more bad money after bad money. So, or good money after bad money, I should say.
Well, I mean, the other idea is, where have you seen examples? I mean, you mentioned, you know, when your route on any kind of a project that you've taken on in the business world suddenly becomes a logistical nightmare. Any examples you can think of, whether your own or others you've seen in the credit union world, where you think the same kind of logic? I loved your, you know, your comment in the article, we suck at stopping, which is kind of,
we do. I suck at stopping, because I think that as executives, we see success as achievement. And we say, the way we view our projects is, if we complete them, that equates to success. And it really doesn't. If you complete a project at the cost of other business initiatives, or at financial cost, or cost in staffing or morale, when things are not going according to plan, that is not success. Yeah, you completed your project, but you didn't do it successfully.
But the phrase Pyrrhic victory comes to mind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I had been at a conference and was talking to a colleague who was describing a big project at his credit union. And this project, the goal really was just to find operational efficiencies in the back office. And it was going to save one department a lot of time and manual work. And partway through the project, they realized that the project was creating a new problem for the credit union. And they had to create new manual processes just to make the project work. So in the end, one department saved a lot of hours a week in their maintenance of this product. But another department in the credit union picked up those hours in manual processes each week. So it was a net neutral and cost the credit union quite a bit of money, time, morale. And I thought, we are not great at recognizing when our trail becomes a logistical nightmare. And certainly I'm not saying quit, throw your hands up and quit, but it's time to pause and evaluate what was our scope and timeline and budget going into this project, because that's kind of your iron triangle of project management. And if one of those things changes, you've changed the equation of the project, and you need to stop and kind of take a step back and consult with stakeholders, consult with your CEO or the senior leader who is sponsoring the project, and decide then, is this something that we are willing to accept, and or is it time to strategically stop this endeavor and do something different?
The other thing that comes to mind, you made the point that you were at a decision point where you had that last opportunity with a logical road to get out of Dodge before, you know, pretty much were past a fail-safe point.
Right.
MAPS has been on the forefront of providing cannabis banking services, and I know you continue to be one of the leaders in that space. And we've talked about this too in terms of an exit strategy. I know you've talked in, long before you took this trip, I've heard you talk about the fact that you've had to have an exit strategy basically in your desk drawer, because one of the things that allows credit unions to provide cannabis services is the Cole memo. We don't have to get into the details of all that, but if that were to get rescinded, suddenly you might run into some kind of, you know, murky legal waters all over again. So I'm thinking there's a parallel there as well.
There certainly is. And ironically, the Cole memo actually was rescinded, but thankfully, not to get into all of the details, but that language is still kind of enshrined in the FinCEN guidance that we follow. But that played a huge factor in our exit strategy at the time. And yeah, I don't think that it is wise to go into any business endeavor or project or initiative or whatever you want to call it without an exit strategy. Because sometimes when you exit a project, there can be great cost to that too. And you have to be able to go into it with a plan before you're emotionally attached to the project. And before you've invested all of the work to make the project successful, you need to document what would cause us to stop. What would be the trigger that would say, you know what, this is no longer worth the cost. And with cannabis banking, that's a perfect parallel, because we went into it with an exit strategy that was very black and white. And over the years, we've developed it and added more triggers to it and more specifics about what would factor into that equation. And we keep it updated and it's still there. And there may come a day when we may have to employ it. I hope that doesn't come, but it's certainly possible, especially in our political landscape today. I mean, anything can happen.
I was going to say, I mean, I'm assuming most of it has to do with the regulatory clarity is probably what most factors mostly into those triggers.
Regulatory developments, and also just if there's, depending on our leadership nationally, there could be a change in law enforcement priorities. We could get an attorney general who decides, you know what, this is federally illegal, and I'm going to make an example out of this industry and show a very hard stance on law and order. And the easiest place to start is where the money starts or where the money is processed. And certainly if something like that happened, we're not going to take on that kind of risk. So that would be a perfect example of a trigger of when to stop.
Again, perfect reason of a chief risk officer in charge of that responsibility. Well, yeah, as I said, we'll post a link to the article. And you mentioned the bear that you ran into. I believe there's a picture of that bear right there along with it, as well as some other nice vistas. So I think it's a really worthwhile read, and a pretty quick read, too.
So well, thank you.
I love the way you kind of brought the whole thing together and both shared a personal experience and really tied it together to the business world as well.
I'm glad. I appreciate you reading it and wanting to talk about it.
And I'm really glad to hear you're actually going to tackle it again, or at least try to tackle it again this year. Like you said, I think that was the first time you had ever applied, and you were incredibly fortunate to actually win the lottery on your first attempt, right?
I know. We lucked out. And again, that was one of the reasons that I kept thinking we can't quit now, because we lucked out and got drawn in the lottery on our first try. So we're going to try again and keep our fingers and toes crossed. But I know without a doubt, I am going to conquer that trail someday.
Well, I will be, I'll be thinking of you in terms of hoping that sending good vibes in terms of clearing the lottery, at least for the first hurdle. And then we can worry about the smoke staying clear after that.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Rachel Pruss, Chief Operating Officer of MAPS Credit Union in Salem, Oregon. And I will be seeing you at CUNA GAC. This will just be posting about the time that we're out in DC. Having some further conversations, probably about strategic stopping, I'm hoping as well.
I bet so. I will see you then.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
So it occurred to me that the tale that that Rachel tells, which I find really fascinating, I definitely do encourage you to check out that article she posted to LinkedIn. I think it's really interesting and, you know, reinforces some of the stuff we just talked about. But our good friend Ann Legg here at the podcast from Thrive Strategic Services also did something a little similar. She actually climbed on Kilimanjaro and wound up writing a book about it called Big Data, Big Climb that we've talked about here in the past on the BigCast, and we'll post a link to that one as well. If you've made it this far, you get to hear me kind of be a cranky old man for a minute now and complain a little bit about the economic environment, for lack of a better way of putting it. And my frustration is around the framing of what's going on with the perception in the marketplace of the conditions in the economy right now. And the terminology that keeps getting used around recession, which really is starting to bug me. Got an email from, and again, I'm not going to disclose any names on either of these, but it was a marketing email from a credit union service provider that led with the idea, with a recession looming, you should offer value. Credit union should offer value. Yeah, I mean, credit union should probably always offer value, shouldn't they? The recession looming part, I mean, this is like a constant drumbeat that there is a recession coming, and it very well may be. And, you know, by definition, I think it is safe to say there is a recession coming because markets are cyclical in nature. So at some point, a recession will come, okay? There's that term, that phrase that has been used several times, that economists have predicted 9 of the last 5 recessions. And I feel like we're starting to get into that point right now. Had attended a session recently, again, from an unnamed economist from an industry group that had some fascinating data. I thought the data was excellent. It's some of the better, more robust information I've gotten in some time. It was when the economist actually veered further off script and into opinions that I kind of ran into some challenges. The individual made the point that, yeah, we're probably already in a recession. And maybe from a very parochial view of the piece of the market he was looking at, that may have been true. But I raised my hand and I asked the question, based on what is your criteria? Because one of the questions that always comes up is, what is the definition of a recession? Everybody sees something different. And I asked, and he said that he subscribed to the same definition that I typically do, which is 2 consecutive quarters of GDP decline. Well, he said, and so he's saying we're already in a recession. So, okay, I didn't want to disturb the overall flow of the conversation, so I let it go. But I talked to the person after the conversation and said, I'm curious why you're saying that we're already in it. She said, well, December was down. We had a decline in GDP in December. Said, okay, that's not the quarter. The quarter for Q4 was actually still up. He goes, oh, I'm pretty sure we're going to be down in Q1. So we're pretty much there. Well, I'm not so sure about that, because I'm going to post another link to one of the resources I like to use on a regular basis. The Atlanta Fed maintains an ongoing forecast they call GDP Now, and they forecast where they believe the next quarter's GDP will turn out. And they also plot that over time to show how accurate they are. And they map it against what they have identified as what they call the blue chip estimates of, I think it's the top 10 firms that are out there, econometric firms making those predictions. They are currently predicting that the Q1 forecast for GDP growth is in about the 2.5% range. They are at the high end of those consensus estimates from the other econometrics. But the lowest is basically kind of right around the 0% range. So by definition of a recession, we're not in one now. We're not even going to get the first quarter most likely of a recession in the March quarter, which means that by definition, we couldn't get into a recession until the end of September. And again, like I say, eventually there's going to be a recession by definition. That's not to say there's not challenges out there, but I think, you know, we get so hung up on wording. Obviously, there's issues with continued job loss, but at the same time, the unemployment rate continues to be very low and people who want jobs can find jobs right now. That may not continue to be the case for much, for forever. It almost definitely won't be. We obviously also have issues with inflation, which do seem to be cooling off. But anyway, my point is, I don't understand. It almost feels, and maybe this is kind of what the Fed's trying to do with their increase in inflation rates, interest rates as well, is to try to talk down the market, because it feels like the drumbeat seems to be pointing us toward a recession. I'll be curious to hear more about that. Actually, it's probably a good feed-in A for me to shut up and end up the episode. But also, this is going to be posting at the time that I'll be out in Washington, D.C. at CUNA GAC, which is always one of my highlights of the year. I love going to the Credit Union Government Affairs Conference. And I always love tracking down Mike Schenck, the chief economist. I'll be kind of curious to see what he has to say about recession. So hopefully, the week after you hear this, we'll have some content based on some of the latest and greatest of what we heard out at CUNA GAC. And hopefully that will include the economic update, which Mike always gives, which is one of the highlights of the overall three-day event in my mind. I'll be sharing his thoughts, whether or not I actually get him on tape for an interview, but I hope I do that as well. With that in mind, another episode of the Big Cast in the Books. My name is Glenn Sarvati. You can track me down through my firm, 154 Advisors. You can find me at the Best Innovation Group website, big-fintech.com. You can find me on Twitter at 154 Advisors, on LinkedIn. Drop me a note if you're hearing this and you happen to be at CUNA GAC. Would be happy to meet up and say hi. Would also be happy if you would subscribe to the podcast and also check out. We have new content every Tuesday. So as I say, next week, hopefully the latest highlights of GAC. With that in mind, safe travels to everyone as we move into a busier conference season. And as always, thanks for listening.
Check back each week for the latest from the Big Cast. Or better yet, we hope you'll consider subscribing for free via Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. Tweet us at Big Fintech. Email info@big-fintech.com or visit us at big-fintech.com and click on the media tab where you can post a comment or check out our archive of hundreds of past episodes. See you next week.